This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now it's Douglas County's Commissioner of Dirt with the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
We are here. We are ready to go. 673-4464. And look at that. On the giant temperature gauge, we have a 70 degrees right now in Roseburg.
That's my kind of temperature, I'll tell you that. This is Mike Winters, and I have a lot of information for you if you're interested in your garden, your landscaping, or your plants, or anything like that. And if you have a question, 673-4464 is the number to call, and we'll get you right on and have a discussion. How's that? I hope that's okay with you all. But way back when I owned Wintergreen Nursery, customers would come in and wanting a bonsai plant. Well, I'd chuckle and tell them the correct pronunciation was bonsai, not bonsai. Bonsai is when the Japanese flyers flew into ships and stuff during World War II. Bonsai is a whole different ballgame. So it's the art of growing a tree in a small pot and keeping it small by pruning and shaping it to look like a mature tree, but it's dwarfed because it's in a small pot and you don't let it get humongously big. Anyway, I started my collection, maybe 40 years ago or more, but I saw some bonsai at a few nurseries, and being my own collection, which has grown to about, 40 plants, I have pines, I have cedars, fir, Japanese maple, boxwood, and a few other types that most of them are slow growing types because you don't want something there that grows a foot a day, you know, trying to bonsai it, it's not going to work. But the first one I tried was just run over by a large truck at a nursery. I was behind the truck waiting to get to some plant materials, and apparently the truck was unloading plants, big old semi, and I looked over by the fence, and there was this poor pine tree, not very large, but somehow it got squashed, or I'm not sure what happened, if it got run over by the truck or anything like that. But I thought, gee whiz, you know, that's a shame. So I got out of the truck and looked at it and rescued it. And the owner of the nursery was, maybe 100 feet away, 200 feet away. And as the truck moved, I moved over and I said, hey, Jim, this tree was crushed by that truck. How much you want for it? He said, I'll take it. It's free. I said, well, shoot, okay, I like that. Because it was perfect because it was bent and crushed so much it made a perfect bonsai with a little bit of pruning. And I thought, well, that's good. You know, like it was smashed, twisted, and ugly, but, you know, I thought, what the heck? It's got potential. So I rescued it and put it in my truck, and I think I can save this. But anyway, he laughed at me and said, oh, yeah, you can have it. Good luck with that. And I said, okay. But it was a dwarf Mugo pine, and they're a small-growing pine tree that a lot of people use for small hedges or just little barriers and stuff like that. So I took it to my nursery and began to prune the mangled little tree and didn't leave very many branches on it because they were broken or smashed or something. And then I planted it in a bonsai dish and added a root stimulizer to encourage fast root growth or regeneration. And I put it on a shelf at the nursery, and it didn't grow. It just kind of sat there, but it stayed green. And I noticed at one point, a few months down the road, that it formed some buds, so I knew that it was alive. It was going to make it. All right, I like that. But I just let it sit there for the next year. Excuse me. And about twice a week, I would treat it with this root stimulant, and just to get those roots in a healthy position so that they can feed that plant. And I fertilized it a little bit. But as fall approached, I just left it alone. I thought, well, we'll see if it'll survive the winter. And the next spring, those buds pushed new growth, and it was very healthy. And I didn't want to sell it, so I put a very high price on it. And nobody bought it, thankfully, because it was an outrageously high price. And who would want to have something like that? But I didn't care because I liked it. And I had other less expensive bonsai to sell to customers. But this was kind of special. I thought I could make something special out of it. And people were interested and asked questions, but no buyers. And I said, good. And I priced it way out of range on purpose. Small pots, well, it wasn't a small tree, but the pot was maybe 12 inches around, that kind of thing, and not very deep. It was a bonsai dish. And in 3 years, after 3 years went by, it was beautiful. And I kept raising the price because I didn't want to sell it. Well, somebody really liked it because one morning when I came to work, it was gone. Somebody had stolen it overnight. They took my bonsai that I'd been, you know, recuperating for 3 years. And I thought, well, shoot, I don't know. I went from mad to sad real quick. And I kind of got in my pickup truck at that point. And I rode down the Highway 99 there, looking in the ditches to see if anybody had thrown it, you know, just wanted to steal the pot, but threw the plant out. And I rode all the way down to the Dillard store, and I didn't see anything on the right-hand side. So I turned around the Dillard store, came back to the nursery, and was going slow to see if there anybody had thrown it in a ditch. Well, no such luck. I hope that the bonsai is still alive, but I doubt that the thief kept it alive. Over the years, I've added to my collection at home, and I have, like I say, about 40 bonsai on my back retaining wall, which gets the sun till about 5 p.m. And when the sun drops behind my west ridge, there's total shade. And that's only in the summertime. In the wintertime, there's almost no sun, but occasional. But over the years, I've collected trees from high elevations around Diamond Lake, Mount Thielson, Mount Bailey, those areas, where plants don't have a real easy time growing. And they get kind of gnarly and twisted and dwarfed on their own because of Mother Nature. And I always go to the Glide Ranger Station, and I get a permit, and it's usually about the middle of July or toward the end of July. And I get the permit, and I go up there in that North Umpqua country to dig some small trees. And I have a mountain hemlock that is multi-stemmed, and the stems are curved and gnarly and about 4 inches in diameter. It's absolutely beautiful. And I counted the rings of a same-sized adjacent tree, and I counted 80 annual rings on this little tree. It was 80 years old. And I have that one in a larger box. I couldn't fit it into a small bonsai dish, but I built some boxes, and they're one of these days they're going to rot because they're made out of wood, and I'll have to get a real pot for it. But it's made out of 2x4s and that kind of thing, and it's about, foot deep, but it is a beautiful tree, a very gnarly mountain hemlock. That area up there above Diamond Lake and Lamola Lake, there's a lot of hemlock up there, a lot of mountain hemlock, just beautiful evergreen tree. And I love going up there and seeing that. But anytime I see a small, like miscited tree, I visualize a bonsai from it. And if it's on government land, not private property, of course, I wonder if they won't miss that one tree because there's about 500 others right around there. But it's a fun hobby, and it's a good excuse to go for a ride in the high country, too. That's really important. I love that country up there. And Mother Nature has done some real fantastic things with the trees. I've gone over the summit. You go past the Diamond Lake, Crater Lake Junction, and about a quarter mile down on the downhill side toward Highway 97, there's a little logging road that goes off to the left. And one day I thought, I'll go down there and see what's up. And it didn't look like there was much traffic on it, but it was drivable. And I drove back in there about a half a mile, and it was all flat area. And there were about a jillion trees back in there. And so I parked my truck, and I just walked through and look at all the little trees and see the ones that are beat up the most and gnarly and ugly. And that's the ones I dig. And I get a good root ball. And usually I have some good wet mulch in the back of my pickup, so I heal them in so they don't dry out. Maybe collect two or three there's only millions of them up there, so it's really hard to select the ones you want. But bonsai with conifers is really, really interesting, because you can shape them and prune them and twist them, and if you get a good hardy tree like one of those high elevation pines or a hemlock or something along those lines, they do very well in a little shallow bonsai pot. And there's not much room for the roots to spread, so consequently they slow down their growth habit. And consequently, you have a tree that gets naturally dwarfed just because the root system doesn't have room to grow anywhere. And it's just beautiful the way they are formed. And I've gone to other nurseries and looked through their bonsais, and they're okay. A lot of them are nice, but for the most part, they're just okay. But my collection at home, like I said, I think I got 30 or 40 of them at home sitting on my retaining wall. And I've had them there for, 15 years, somewhere along that line. And haven't lost a one yet, other than maybe the dog or the cat getting up there and chewing on it, but that's all. But you can go up there. You get a permit, like I say, from Steamboat or Glide Ranger Station, and that gives you a permit to dig small trees. Cost, I think, $5 or $10. I'm not sure. I forget. It's been a while since I've been there. But you can start wandering around in that country, and really there are just hundreds of potential bonsai available. And these trees, like I say, are tough because they're in a very tough environment. They get covered in multiple feet of snow each year. The soil is kind of a pumice soil, so there's not a whole lot of nutrition in that soil. So consequently, the growth is somewhat diminished and dwarfed. So they're already dwarfed, and you can get a tree that's a foot tall, and it'll be 15 years old, for crying out loud, and that's it. And you go, how did that survive? But go on up there and walk around, take a look, and be picky. Go slow and maybe only select, one or two and treat them like good, so they have, make sure that the roots don't dry out on your way home. Make sure you have a bucket or a pot that with some nice wet bark mulch in it or something like that, and it'll be fine. The coast also has some possibilities. There are different shapes because mainly the wind at the coast blowing on these young trees 300 days a year will give you some bonsai choices with twisted little pines. And they've got little shore pines down there. And the consistent wind blowing, the trees bending inward, inland. And then when the sun comes up to the west, the top of the tree is trying to turn back. So you've got some nice natural curvature to a young tree. And they're very easy to dig in that sand at the coast. I've never had any of them die. None of them even looked sad. And it's just the preparation. And if you like to do something like this, it's really easy to do. You can get I've got a good book here. It's called The Essentials of Bonsai. And It has step 1 to step 10 or however many steps there are, but it'll give you piece by piece on how to treat the tree, what to do with it, how to fertilize it, how to water it, all those kinds of things. And you just set it out on a patio. Nothing hurts it. The sun doesn't hurt it. The rain doesn't hurt it. The wind doesn't hurt it. And you come up with this fantastic little tree. And I've had people come to my house, and they'll go and look and say, oh, you got some bonsais. And I said, well, they're called bonsai. And they want to see them. So I give them the mini tour and tell them how old these things are and where I got them. And some, I've got some birches, some dwarf birches that I planted. And they really look beautiful. And I've got some other types of trees in there just to experiment and see, hey, can I make this look ancient and old? And one year I've got this one conifer that it was very, you know, fairly large, and it was a triple stem. Apparently when it was a younger tree, a bigger tree fell on it, or a branch fell on it and kind of split it apart. So it didn't have a single trunk. It had like three trunks, and one going this way and kind of curving back, and another going another way. Anyway, I thought, man, this is so cool. So I dug it out of the ground, and the digging is easy, like I say, because it's pummy soil up there. Brought it back, and I've had it. I got a big box for it, and I've had it in that box, oh gosh, 10 years now, and it's absolutely gorgeous. It only grows about an inch a year. Perfect. And, well, I'll tell you the rest of the story when we get back.
All right, 422, Mike Winters, the Commissioner, Dirt, 673-4464. Mike Winters, Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
It is 425, afternoon report at 5, 69 degrees. Sunshine for the most part here in the Umpqua Valley. And the word is bonsai with the Commissioner of Dirt.
Bonsai, yeah, also. Anyway, I'm talking about how to pick them and what to do with them once you get them picked and all that kind of stuff. But like I started to say, the coast has some possibilities too, namely because the wind's blowing on those young trees all the time, 300 days a year. We'll give you some, you know, bonsai choices with these twisted little pines. And one factor important to keep in mind is to be able to see the potential of any small tree or shrub when you're out in the woods looking for possibilities. In other words, don't dig a tree and waste it. Over the years, I've learned to be highly selective of a potential candidate, and I like them twisted and broken, and I can see the potential because with a little bit of pruning all the way around, you take out the bruised parts, the broken parts, and you just leave the good stuff. And in time, it just gets better. It takes years because you've got it in a very small pot, very small bonsai dish that might only have 2 inches of soil, maybe 2 inches, maybe a big one would have 3 inches or 3.5 inches of soil. And so the bigger trees I put in the bigger pots, obviously, but they're smaller ones that I want to mess with, and so consequently I'll put them in those small shallow containers. But they don't take a whole lot of care. They're easy. I can't remember. Well, we've had so much rain, I haven't had to go out and water anything. But usually during the week when we have like normal summer heat, say, you know, 85 or so, I might water them every other evening or every other third evening just to make sure they stay damp. And I only select very hardy trees, the pines, the firs, the hemlocks, those kinds of things that I get from very harsh sites. And harsh sites produce heavy-duty, good-looking trees. One day I was up there, up by Lamola, and the cut bank on the driver's side of my pick up, you know, fairly steep and full of sand and pummy soil. And I look up at the top of the bank. I was only going about 5 miles an hour. Nobody wants to be behind me. And there's this pine tree, not very large, maybe 2 feet tall, but it was hanging out to the side instead of going straight up and down. It was out sideways, and it was kind of bent over in a couple places. I thought, gosh, I got to have that dude. So I clawed my way up the bank, and I had to go down a ways to make sure I could get some footholds. Went and got that tree and dug it up very quickly. It was easy digging because, like I say, it's pummy soil up there. And slid it down to truck and took it home. And I thought, well, I'm gonna put this in a larger container because I didn't have any. It was too big to put in a small container, so that's why I built this cedar box for it. And the cedar box probably 2.5 feet long and 18 inches wide and 6 inches deep, maybe. So I mounted up the good soil mix and put it in there, and it grew. It pushed new growth. Not a lot, but I was kind of babying it a little bit. Well, a few years went by, and it was just really looking sharp, and I had a booth at the fair. And I thought, well, shoot, I'll just take it to the fair. And I took it and I asked the home builders, where could I put this display tree that I have? And they said, well, a little walk-through area where people can walk and see waterfalls and stuff like that. So it takes two people to pick this box up. And we hiked it in there and put it by the waterfall. It was amazing how many people stopped to look and admire that tree. And I had a little name thing in the presentation so they could read, oh, this is a lodgepole pine from 5,000 feet, blah, 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 blah. And a lot of folks really liked that, wanted to know where they could buy those kinds of things. I said, well, gee whiz, try Wintergreen Nursery. We've got a whole bunch of them. It's my hobby. I like to do that. So anyway, they're a long-term project. There's no two ways about it. And so you have to be patient with them. Don't try to force the growth. Just excuse me. I've been hacking all stinking week and driving me nuts. But one important factor is to keep in mind is to be able to see the potential of any of these small trees or shrubs when you're out in the woods looking for possibility. In other words, don't dig a tree and then waste it. Don't dig a tree and say, oh gosh, that's not going to make a very good one, and then they throw it away or something like that. You know, don't waste it. Make sure it's the tree you want, and you dig it carefully and heal it in some good stuff, and take it home. And I've never had one die. I've probably over the years have taken at least 40 or 50, well, not 50, probably about 40 seedlings out of that one area. They've all done well. They've all grown. I brought some to the fair. I had a fair booth for a few years, and I brought some to the fair just so people could look and say, oh, what are bonsais? I said, yeah, they're bonsai, all right. And they want to know how to do this and how to do that and how to keep them small and just answer the questions. A lot of interest in it, but not too many people have the ability or the wherewithal to be successful with them. You gotta know something about plants, and over the years I've learned to be highly selective of potential candidates there, and I like them twisted and broken, and I can see that potential. It's however, you know, you can shape your own seedlings by wiring the branches into circles or twist them into any shape you want to create. It takes at least two growing seasons of training these things with the wire so that the growth and the direction you want it to grow, when you take the wire off, it's still growing in that direction. It's still twisted. It doesn't all of a sudden pop up to a regular tree. You formed the tree. You made it look old, ancient, and whatever. But the longer you have the branches tied, the more growth they put on, and they'll stay shaped or twisted, like I say, when the wire or string is removed. I don't use string. String lasts maybe maybe a year, and that's about it. That's why I use special wire. It doesn't. It's very easily bent and twisted, so that you can bend it loosely around a branch and then turn the branch upside down or right side out or whatever way you want to twist the, and it stays that way. And like I say, after about 2 years, that's where the growth goes, and you can take the wire off, and the branch stays in the shape that you put it on. Now, if you're starting. And just wanting to start in the bonsai world, pick plants, like I say, that are tough and won't need a lot of care. That's very important. Be minimal in your first pruning and see how that goes. You want to just go lightly and say, I'll just prune a little bit of this and shape this up. And you can go to nurseries and look at established bonsai to get some ideas, and then you can also ask questions about when, where, how much to prune. There are books. I've got one here that I brought for Kyle to look at. It's called The Essentials of Bonsai. And it's got some good basic ideas in it. And there are other books on the market. There are those garden books and stuff like that. There's always one on bonsai. So I've got probably three or four different books on bonsai, how to treat them, how to prune them, and all that kind of stuff. And what's prunable, what's usable, what's good, what's bad, and you don't want to ruin anything, so that's why you should buy the book, buy a book on the basics, and that way you'll get an idea. Even if you make a mistake and you make too many cuts, the plant will survive, and wait until next year for growth to come on. It'll happen, but. Like I said before, these books are there with illustrations, color photos that you can give, that can guide you. And it's a fun hobby if you like plants. The more you do, the more you'll learn. And I started my first ones back in the 70s just to see if it'd work. And they did. But I didn't have the pots or the money to buy the expensive pots that they go in. So I built boxes for them. But, like I say, the more you do, the more you're going to learn. So, time to change horses here a bit, and we'll take a break first and come back.
All right, 435 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon 4:39, 21 minutes away from 5 o'clock. The afternoon report coming up, Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show. Douglas County's Commissioner of Dirt has been here as long as dirt. Much of the dirt in the county.
Yeah, me and the dirt are about the same age, so you have a question about that, 673-4464.
And what was Lewis and Clark, what were they like?
What?
What were Lewis and Clark like?
Lewis and Clark, they were jolly old fellows, and we killed some buffalo and had the barbecue.
Not buying it.
Oh, you're not?
No. Maybe we should stick to lawns and gardens.
You asked the question. I had to have an answer.
Well, okay. But sounds like fake news.
Yeah, it was. It was like CBS, you know. But anyway, if you're starting in the bonsai world, like I say, pick plants that are tough. You won't need a lot of care. Be minimal in your first pruning and see how that goes. And if you can't go to the mountains to find wild stuff, maybe go up to Callahan's. I've been up through the Callahan's numbers of times and found it. Well, when I was elk hunting, I go, wow, that'd make a pretty bonsai. So I'd dig it up as carefully as I could. And they're all small trees, a foot or less. And stick it in my hunting vest and carry it around with me until I got back to my rig and went home. But, it's a fun thing. And a lot of people know how I'm not the most patient person in the whole world. And they say, why do you do that? you know, it takes forever to get it there. I says, no, but I enjoy it. I don't have to mess with it. It just does it because it's tough, and I like tough plants. So there, leave me alone. But so, like I said earlier, before you start going and hunting for stuff, get some books with some illustrations, and they'll guide you. It's a fun hobby, and they make you do. You can just learn a whole lot just from looking at the photos in the books and going, oh yeah, that's how you do that. Oh, okay, I didn't have an idea. You can't hurt the plants. The plants that you select are usually tough, crooked, gnarly ones, and what you do to them after you pull them up and put them in a nice pot with nice soil and water and fertilizer, they really enjoy that. It's a good thing for them. But the more you, like I say, the more you do, the more you're going to learn, and you're going to make mistakes along the way. That's okay. But anyway, it's time to change some horses here. And with this beautiful weather, it's time to start training your lawn with this weather. I mean, those lawns are going crazy because we've had so much rain. You're going to see fast growth on our lawns, and you're going to have fast growth probably for another month and a half at least. And so don't turn on your sprinkler system for a while or water your lawns. Leave them alone. But one thing is when you go to mow it the first time, don't cut it too short. Just give it a light trim and see how that grows. And maybe you have to give it another light trim before the week's out just to keep it, you know. But on the second cutting, you could drop the mower down one notch and see how that works. What you don't want to do is drop it down to the bottom and go through and scalp the whole thing, because then you come up with all the yellow dead grass that's been down there all winter. And then they have to recuperate and push new green stuff up. And that takes, you know, a couple of weeks to do that. But the secret to a nice lawn is simple. Number one, don't cut it too short. Simple. Number two, fertilize. Fertilize with a great lawn food like every 4 to 6 weeks. And three, buy the top brand of lawn food with all the elements and nutrition that you can buy. There are some out there that are very inexpensive. And what you don't want to put on your lawn is Triple 16. Triple 16 comes in a 50-pound sack usually, but it's for pastures. It's for agricultural situations. And I've seen people put it on their lawns, and the grass grows 90 miles an hour, but there's no long-term sustaining value to the Triple 16. And when you're a farmer, you've got the equipment. You go out there, you put the Triple 16 in your hopper, and you run up and down your fields at the appropriate time, get stuff growing really well. And when it gets to a certain height, it's time to put the cows, the horses, or whatever you got out there and let them feed. And they probably do that at least twice a year, probably in the spring and again in the early fall. And that's the perfect thing for pasture lands and that kind of stuff. It's good. But on lawns, you just don't want to do that. Like I say, it energizes the lawn really well, but it doesn't give it anything. And the commercial lawn foods that I'm talking about have other trace elements in it. I think most of them have about 6 or 8 more trace elements in it, other than the nitrogen, phosphorus, and the potassium. And those are the three main elements in a lawn food. But you want the stuff to where you can spend a few more bucks, not much, a couple more dollars per bag, but it's going to last in a slow release, and it's going to last more than, you know, 2 cuttings of your lawn. It's going to last maybe 6 weeks before you have to really get there and do it again. So if you do it now, oh gosh, what's this, April? I don't know. Yeah, it's April something. You won't have to do it again until like end of May, 1st of June. And then you do it 1st of June. You're going to probably be warm by that time, so you're going to have to water it in. Excuse me. And consequently, It'll grow and be green all the way through June and July. And then it with all the extended heat that we have during that time of year, you're going to have to water and get on that regular watering schedule and then fertilize it again like the end of July, 1st of August, and then one more time in October, and your lawn's going to be healthy. It's going to outgrow the weeds, and if you mow it properly on a regular basis, it's going to respond to that. So that's it's not rocket science, but it's you got to pay attention to what you're doing and the type of fertilizer that you add to it, and you can have a very nice lawn. And when you, especially in a front yard, let's say you've got a nice house in Newcrest or whatever, and your front lawn is, it's a sculpted front lawn with curves and all that kind of stuff. It was landscaped professionally, say. Well, day comes that you want to sell your home, and the potential buyer pulls up to your address, and the first thing they see is this beautiful, green, lush lawn. That adds so much value right off the bat to your home. And when you start talking to the potential buyer, they want to know, how do you get your lawn so green? How come it's this? How come it's that? And it leads to a sale. And I've heard that from realtors. And my one daughter is a realtor. And it's something, it's just a plus. You know, the yards that are not taken care of, not fertilized or not watered. If they have a lawn, it might be partially green and partially yellow, and some of the shrubs are kind of weepy and winky. And, you know, a potential buyer comes up and looks at it and says, oh, okay, that's pretty good. I'm at the yard. Front yard, at least, it's not, you know, it's not appealing, but we'll go in there and see what we can do. Whereas a good lush lawn and beautiful shrubs, and right away that puts the potential buyer in a good mood, and they want to do that because it's just simple. It's the picture. You go, whoa, yeah, that is beautiful. But after you've cut that lawn the second time, you can lower your mower down, say, a notch, but don't scalp it, and get some lawn food after the second cutting, and watch how the lawn responds. And you, once you get the feel of it, you'll say, okay, I need 3 bags a year for my front yard and 3 bags a year for my backyard. Well, the co-op has all that, so do the box stores. But get good stuff. Don't buy that, like I say, which is on sale or is 16. It's not good. So the secret to a nice lawn is simple. Don't cut it too short. Fertilize every 4 to 6 weeks. Buy the top brand of lawn food with all the trace elements. And if the lawn is draining well and has pockets of water, you'll need to aerate your turf this summer for better drainage. A nice lawn, like I say, or yard, has to be fertilized on a regular basis. Just like we like to eat on a regular basis, so does a lawn. It responds very well. It won't die, but it'll get weak. And that's when the weeds start to appear. When the lawn is weak, it's not as vigorous as it once was, and there's not as much grass, you know, blades per square foot or whatever, that's when the weeds have the weed seed's always in the soil, period. But if it has no room to grow, it won't sprout. So if you've got a good lush lawn that's full, you're not going to have very many weeds. But if it starts to get weak and you've got some, then all of a sudden a few bare spots will pop up, and next thing you know, you got this dandelion popping up there. And then you got another one over here and another one over here. While dandelions are pretty yellow and they're very nice, it's not what makes the lawn what you want. So you can't expect a nice lawn if you don't feed it or if you don't mow it on a regular schedule. And like I say, don't start watering until you test your soil moisture. If the soil is moist, if you dig a couple of test holes, they don't have to be large, you know, 6 inches down with a small shovel, and keep the turf that you pulled out, put that to the side, and reach down there with your hand, feel the soil. If it feels damp, you're in good shape. Then you can put that piece of turf back in the hole, and it'll give you an idea of, I have to maybe water this once a week now, or I have to water it twice a week, or maybe I have to water it every 2 weeks. It just doesn't matter. But it gives you some basis on which to water, to fertilize, that kind of thing. And once you've been through that process, you got it. You're good to go all the time, and it looks good. You know, it's very, 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 very healthy. Less bugs, less weeds. And like I say, the soil moisture thing is very important. And if you check it, like I say, once a month, you're going to determine your watering schedule and frequency and the time. Now,
hold that thought.
I'll hold that thought.
Back with more in a moment. Mike Witter's Lawn and Garden Show, 451 at News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
It is our final segment for this week with the Commissioner of Dirt, 673-4464. If you've got a question this afternoon.
And if you call, I'll answer. It's simple. Anyway, I'm talking about lawns and fertilizing, et cetera, et cetera. But overwatering, and people don't understand this, especially on lawns, overwatering is the biggest problem. Number one, you're wasting water. Number two, it's saturating the soil and rotting some of the roots, and it's not doing the lawn any good, and the lawn is not usable if it's mushy and spongy and all that stuff. But it's a bigger, overwatering is a bigger problem than underwater. If it's too wet, let it dry out. If you have a sprinkler system, make sure all the zones are working and there are no broken heads that are spitting out 10 gallons a minute onto a certain part of your lawn. You can't figure out why it's browning up and dying, and you walk out there and you sink up to your ankles in your lawn. Well, it's because you got too much water on there. But you should be, you know, once a planting bed or a lawn is established, you can pretty much reduce your watering time on all that stuff. And when planting beds that are established, you just use less water, period. Once they're established, they're good to go. And depending, of course, on your soil drainage and the age of your shrubs and trees, and less frequent but longer watering time. So it might be every 5 to 10 days that you let your plants and your garden go, and then you give it a good soak, and that way it gets down into the root systems and you're good for another week or two. It depends on your soil, of course. And if your landscape has been established for 3 years, water heavy once a month at the most. I have trees and shrubs in my yard that I never water unless I see wilting. And I very seldom see wilting except maybe in the end of July or first of August. And I just don't do it. But I have potted plants and large plants. I water maybe twice a month, maybe three times a month, depending on the temperature. But some folks, they water their pots every day, just water, 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 and can't figure out what the heck's wrong with this plant. The leaves are turning yellow and dropping off. Well, because you rotted the roots, they're on the way out. But every yard and landscape is different. So any advice I give is for my plants and my soil, and that's what I base that on. But every yard is different, like I say. And if your neighbor every day don't want to follow waters every day, you don't want to follow their example. Take a look at their yard. Does it look good to you? Does it look wonderful? Well, if it does, copy them. But don't do it. They might have different soil, different drainage, different fertilizing program. So have a chat and say, how come your lawn is so green all the time and you're mowing it eight times a week? Well, not eight times, but mowing it quite a bit. You know, your yard may have great drainage or no drainage. All yards are not the same just because they were all built, that block was all built in the same week or something or in the same year. They're not the same because you've got equipment running on them and preparation for landscape and all that. It's all different. So, and you can also test the soil moisture in your vegetable garden and make sure that it's damp, not overly wet. Because if it's damp, it's going to grow. It's going to produce for you. And like I say, it's too wet, you get rot, and it doesn't produce very much. Tomatoes are a good indicator of that. If you overwater tomatoes, do you think, what's wrong with my tomatoes? You know, the amateur does, the new guy does, and he waters it some more, and then the tomato plant falls over because you've rotted all the roots, and the tomato plant is 2 feet tall. It can't. There's nothing to stabilize it, nothing to keep it up in the straight up. So, I would wait, like I say, until May, for best results on getting the garden in. And it takes a while for the soil to warm up and dry out, especially this year. We've had record amounts of rainfall. And if you use the same spot every year for your garden, you'll know when it's time. And if it's been producing well, go. I have hot raised beds for my garden plants, and I never overwater. But they're always kind of damp, and it's easy to do. And I have great produce. The peppers, the tomatoes. 1 year I planted corn in the box. They didn't do so hot. I don't know why. Corn doesn't like boxes, I guess. But April is a nice month, but May is warmer. And even if you plant your garden and wait till May, you're still going to get a lot of produce by, say, July or even sooner, depending on your soil, depending on how you treat it, and what you do to it. And I think we're done.
We are done.
Okay. Well, thank you for listening. I hope you learned something, and I'll be here next week.
All right.
Bring
Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show every Friday at 4, and the podcast up soon at 541radio.com from News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.